listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Good friend of the show. He does a great job for the NFL Network. It's James Palmer, our boy, based out of Denver. He's been everywhere, man. Just check his Instagram. He's got a nice little montage of the last couple weeks. What's up, James? How we doing, baby?
Hey, I appreciate the follow on the gram, Zach. I appreciate it, man.
No doubt, man. I'm a guaranteed like, dude. I like all your pictures, man. Just like mine back. That's all.
Do you do that with every single person you follow on Instagram? Do you like every single photo? You just go down the list with your thumb liking them all?
Honestly.
Or should I not feel privileged that you like this?
No, you should, but I do have a tendency to just like a lot. If I'm following you, I probably have some love for you. And if I have some love for you, I can tap my thumb twice for you and make you feel a little bit better.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Can we move on to football here? Goobers. Can we just get on to football, like some real talk? All right. I'm not on Instagram. Let's move on to some real stuff.
James, you wrote a piece about Bradley Chubb and how he is on the precipice of potentially stardom. If you don't mind, just talk about what you wrote in that piece about Bradley Chubb.
Yeah, the idea came up kind of early in camp, and you know, I've been around. You mentioned going to spots. I mean, I've hit probably 10 or so camps already. And, you know, everywhere you go, you know, everybody knows I live in Denver, and they kind of bring up, you know, how's Flacco look, what's Fangio doing, what's Vaughn. And his name never really comes up. And his name doesn't come up, I don't think, in the national media that I'm a part of at all. I think people in Denver have an idea of how good this guy is. But I kind of wanted to kind of dig a little bit and see. You know, my thought is he had an unbelievable rookie season. I mean, 12 sacks in your rookie year is kind of crazy. If you look at other guys that are kind of in the all-time list, it's like Bruce Smith had like 6.5. Like Kevin Green had 0. Strahan had 1. You know, Jason Taylor had 5. Like to have double-digit sacks in your rookie season is really difficult. And the more I talk to people around the league, they know who really – I mean, Kareem Jackson may have said it best to me because he wasn't here – he said in Houston, Bill O'Brien, in a full team meeting, and remember, Kareem plays defense, so this wasn't a meeting with the offense to try to get ready for the Broncos Week 9 defense. It was the entire team, and he brought up Bradley Chubb and what he was doing leading into Week 9 in terms of wrecking game plan.
Wow.
And that's a rookie getting talked about by a head coach in a full team meeting, not just to the offense. And Kareem was like, to people that know ball, like, he wasn't flying under the radar. But I think nationally, probably because he does the same thing Vaughn does, and he's one of the best people to do it on the planet, speaking of Vaughn, I think that's one of the reasons why. And he also, last year, talking with him for a long time, wasn't really even that comfortable, which is the crazy part. Like, he was telling me that he was just getting his feet wet in the NFL, just trying to figure out what it's like, life in the NFL, was not himself, was not comfortable, and still goes out there and has 12 sacks. He was quiet. Don't expect that this year. And I think just all of that together, I think let him kind of fly under the radar heading into this year, and everything, and we can get into it, that kind of lines up for him, I think that he could be the guy that becomes a household name after the 2019 season.
Yeah, that'd be nice, James. And I know you've been around the NFL here the last few weeks. Big injuries over there with the Chargers, starting with Keenan Allen had an injury, and now the reports are coming out about Derwin James was in a walking boot. He might have a significant foot injury. Give us the updates on those two guys.
Yeah, that's the crazy. I mean, I know Broncos fans, it's a team that's a rival in the division, right? But it's a team that, if anybody really loves football, you always go, how does this happen to this team every single offseason? I don't understand it because of the slow start they had last year affected them, I think, down the stretch. They're one of the best teams in football, and it just always happens to somebody. And I think the James one is huge. I mean, Keenan Allen, he's going to miss the preseason, no surgery really or anything with that, but, you know, missing some time with a guy that, you know, has had the same quarterback but has had issues is always concerning, but not nearly as big as James. I mean, this dude is an absolute game-changing talent. That is just through the roof. And this Jones fracture, which is kind of what it's called, you know, in the medical world, it can be really significant. I mean, it's the same one that I think Sammy Watkins had. I think Julio Jones, Dez Bryant has had. They put a screw in it. And so essentially this is significantly huge for the Chargers defense. I mean, it really is massive. This guy made the Pro Bowl. I mean, and then it was an all pro as a rookie. He's a game-changing player. So this changes the AFC West. And I go back to the beginning of it, is that you don't like to root against teams or root against guys to get hurt. And I know it's a team in the division, but you just have to, if you're Phillip Rivers and you're coming down the stretch, you got to be thinking, can we just please like have everybody healthy week one? And yeah. I know injuries will happen, but
right.
they happen so frequently to them before they even get going. You know, Hunter Henry last year was just so massive for them after, you know, coming about. So, I mean, it's going to be another hurdle for those guys to come over. And if you go around, as you mentioned, going around the league, he is a guy that people cannot believe he was picked 17th, like that he fell to 17th. Like that is one of the shockers around the league in how good this guy is and that the Chargers were able to. And I know people in that building, they were just like, the card went in about 3 seconds.
They ran to the podium.
He was sitting there at 17. Yeah, it was like, I don't want anything wrong to happen here in the next minute for us to get Derwin James.
Do you have a timetable? What's the timetable on him? And it's a significant foot injury. I mean, I think it's 2-3 months. Is it 1 month? What's that timetable for that type of Jones foot injury?
Yeah, this could be something to where he could be a candidate for IR
wow.
with the return. Like, it could be something like that for sure. That's definitely – look for that to be – more likely than not that he's a guy that gets the surgery, ends up, I mean, nothing's been determined yet, but that's, you know, in stone, but that's kind of what I would think would happen most likely, is that he'd be put on IR and then he'd be one of their guys they're looking to have return in, you know, halfway through the season.
James Palmer of the NFL Network joining us here on Stokely and Zach. And I'd like to know, and I don't have any list in front of me, but how many rookies have walked into the National Football League and not only been a Pro Bowler their first year, but a first-team All-Pro as a rookie? I would have to venture to say, I mean, it's got to be like a very, 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 very short list. So that's a huge loss for the Chargers.
There's been eight. There's been eight defensive All-Pros since the merger.
Wow.
That's it. I mean, there were two last year. It was him and, you know, Darius Leonard was out of his mind in Indianapolis. But do you want to hear the list?
Yeah, I do.
I'll give them to you.
I do.
It's Derwin James, Darius Leonard, Ndamukong Suh, Patrick Willis, Javon Kearse, Ronnie Lott, Lawrence Taylor, Al Baker.
Wow.
There's your group with a couple of Hall of Famers in there.
That is pretty good company. Wow, what a blow to the Chargers. You know, on one hand, yeah. I'm like, you know what? Okay, you know, knowing how tough sledding it's going to be for the Broncos in that division this year, there's an element of me that is totally okay with this, but there's another element of me, just as a football fan and a fan of greatness, that doesn't want to see this happen to a guy like Derwin James. So,
exactly.
Yeah, okay. Well, really good stuff. I loved your piece on Bradley Chubb. Really good stuff, James. I'm sure we'll be checking in with you periodically moving forward here.
All right, boys. I'll see you out there tomorrow if you're gonna show. I couldn't be there today. I had to nurse the wife back from ACL surgery.
Oh,
so I'm
okay.
Homeward bound. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hey,
yeah.
I've kept your Sorry. Little cubby there in the Broncos media room. I've kept it nice and it's not too messy. But don't come in and just try to take over though. Okay, I still got my little space there. Right.
That's fine. Just don't take my Kanye West mentality, winner of the media 2017.
You got it, buddy. Thanks, James.
Cool. All right, boys.
All right, there he goes. James Palmer of the NFL Network doing such a good job. And, wow, the Chargers, there's no doubt about it. That is a snake-bitten team.
And that just goes to show you, like, you know, you can look at teams and you can project, but injuries play such a huge role. If you start losing some of these guys, I mean, all of a sudden they go from a contender to a pretender. I mean, you just can't overcome injuries to key guys. And that goes back to the conversation about preseason games. And I don't think this, I don't know if these injuries happen in preseason games or just practice. They can happen at any time, but you know, just making it to the season as healthy as possible sometimes determines your outcome more than anything and how good of a season you'll have.
The Broncos offense across the board today had a really, really rough day. But there's one guy who continues to impress, who continues to grow, and he had moments of shining. Once again, I'll tell you exactly who it was next. So we know that the Broncos offense, in particular, had a really rough day.
They took it on the chin.
Now, Joe Flacco said it's adversity. We got
punched in the face, see how we respond, all those, all that coded language from the starting quarterback himself, if you didn't quite believe us. But let me just say this. I saw some bright spots from a guy that has progressively gotten better and better.
Oh, I like that.
He had a slow start, and we talked about it then. We'll talk about some of the progression now. Noah Fant. Noah Fant. Holy moly. Now I'll say this. It did not come in the team phase. That's really what you want to see. You want to see him shine when there's, you know, teamwork being done and it's more team focused, because that's how it's going to be on Sunday, Mondays, and Thursdays. But they did one-on-ones, okay, and they separated the wide receivers from the running backs and tight ends. So the group that we had the best vantage point, and I have a couple observations with the wide receivers too, one in particular that is not good at all, and it continues the trend as well. But the trend of positivity with Noah Fant, when you watch Noah Fant do a one-on-one drill, it speaks to the reason that he was drafted in the first round. It speaks to the nature of him being a mismatch nightmare, Stoke. Nightmare. The dude creates separation like he's a wide receiver.
Yep.
And when it came to a 50-50 ball, the defender is smaller, and he's trying to fight with Fant and around his body, and ends up being defensive pass interference draped all over Noah Fant, who goes about 6'5". Noah Fant still vacuums the football with his two hands, and he had a play. And if you were out there and you were a member of the media and you saw it, it resonated with you. He had a one-handed catch on the right sideline that was a flash of – now you'll see one-handed catches out there at practice, there's no doubt. But this one was special because he was fully extended. It was the only way he was going to get the football, was to reach out and really lunge for it. And he just once again vacuumed that thing up with one hand with a defender right on his back. It was just awesome to see. Now, I don't want to get all totally caught up in one-on-ones. You should have an advantage there. But the type of advantage that Fant has is exactly what I'm looking for.
I like that. I like it. You know, I don't care. You're talking about a young football player. I don't care if it's one-on-ones, team, seven-on-seven, and where, you know, maybe it's skewed a little bit more to the offense in certain drills. Go out there and get the job done. Go out there as a young football player and be successful and show some growth. You're going up against a new team. How do you respond to seeing new guys and new defenders? And so that's good. That's good to hear. You know, like we talked about earlier, you were on the Broncos offensive side. I had to go to the other field and I watched the Broncos defensive side of the football. So we were split up. So I didn't get the chance to see that. But I did see the 49ers wide receivers taking it to the Broncos DBs. Yeah. I saw that on my side.
Uh-oh.
When you talk about one-on-ones over there, which is more of an offensive drill, obviously, but they were taking it to the Broncos DBs. I was a little bit surprised. I was a little bit surprised. Is that Marquise Goodwin?
Yeah, he's a speedy dude, isn't he?
Yeah, but he's more than that. So this guy's a good football player. He's a good wide receiver. You can tell they're coached up well. They're coached up well. That's Wes Walker. He's a wide receiver coach. He's done a good job there.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, and those guys are good wide. They got some good wide receivers, some good young talent too. So they were taken to the Broncos there in that one-on-one drill. And throughout a lot of practice, their receivers were getting open, and there was more completions on that side of the football than I thought there would be, for sure, against the Broncos defense. I thought this would play perfectly in the Broncos' hands. When you look at our defense, and you look at the way the practice was structured, there's no tackling. You can't tell if these running plays are 10 yards, 20 yards,
That's
5
right.
yards. It's two-hand touch in there pretty much, and they might thud them up and then let them run. But I thought in that type of practice where you can't establish really a run and a presence there in the run game, and the Broncos secondary would really show itself and really make it difficult for the 49ers offense. But that wasn't the case today. It just wasn't how it broke down, and the Broncos got it going. You know, but that was at 11:10 when they finished practice. At what time did you say, 11:25? I mean,
yeah.
It was last period, second to last period of the day.
And the 49ers wide receiving core is not critically acclaimed. I mean, you're not going up against Julio Jones or Michael Thomas or anyone like that. Now, Marquise Goodwin, good football player, but I'm with you. You would think that the Broncos defenders would have some type of advantage there. Real quick on the way out here, I want to play this clip for you. This is Rich Scangarello on Noah Fant's progression thus far.
Yeah, I think Noah's done a great job. I think, Coach Fangio's had a great plan to work as hard, but yeah, give them rest when they need it so their bodies would come back. And a guy like Noah's had to take a lot of reps because he's a rookie to learn and because we've had some injuries. And I think that wore him down a little at times. You know, he's trying to learn and think and play. I think it's slowing down. I think he's playing faster. And I thought in the Seattle game, he really took a step forward, and we got to continue to take steps forward. And I think we got ourselves a heck of a tight end.
It's what we're seeing. What he just said is kind of what we're seeing. Things are slowing down for Noah Fant a little bit. He's able to play a little bit faster, which means he's thinking a little bit less. He is, you know, kind of on schedule.
That's what you're hoping to see from your number 20 overall pick. You're hoping to see progress and him continue to improve and things slow down. And that's what it seems like it's doing for Noah Fant. So that's good. That's positive signs because the Broncos are going to count on him. He's the one difference maker right there at the tight end position. All the rest of the guys right now are just, you know, just guys.
Just guys.
This guy has a chance to be special, and the Broncos need him to be special.
When it comes to this offensive line, I got some good news. I got some bad news. I'll let you pick which goes first next. So I got a little good news and a little bad news when it comes to this offensive line. What do you want to talk about first?
What do I want to talk about first?
Yeah.
The offensive line?
Oh, you weren't listening just now.
Yeah, you had some good news or bad news.
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. I got sidetracked. I was checking something out. What do I want first, good news or bad news? Give me the bad news first. I want to finish on a positive.
I can't see Ron Leary playing 16 games, and I don't know if I see him playing 10.
Agree.
I have no faith. And he left practice today, and they said it was a planned exit that they wanted to predetermine his reps. But even if that's the case, it just shows you how they're handling him. And I was standing next to Ryan Konigsberg for about an hour today, and he called him a ticking time bomb, and I agree. It's just like, I don't trust it. It doesn't feel good in my gut, and it would not shock me at all if by week five, either Don Barclay or Elijah Wilkinson is playing right guard.
Yeah.
It's kind of where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's hard to have a lot of faith and confidence in Ron Leary. He seems like he has every other day off. He couldn't, you know, they had to have a plan for him today. To half a practice it was for him. That was it. He's getting older, coming off of a tough injury last year. Wasn't even playing at a high level then. It's hard to have a lot of confidence that he'll play a full 16 games. Or even half of that, just like you said. I'm with you.
And that stinks because just a couple years ago, Ron Leary was the most exciting signing of that offseason, of that 2017 offseason. It was like, oh, we got Ron Leary from the Cowboys. And it was like, okay, we're fired up. This guy's good. This guy can play.
Best offensive line in the game.
Just kind of is what it is right now.
He had one good year, and last year was underwhelming, and then he got hurt.
Yeah. Yep. And I'll tell you the good news about the offensive line in just a second, because we want to check in with Patrick Saunders, our Rockies insider from the Denver Post. Patrick, yesterday it looked like it was about to be a sweep at home to the Diamondbacks. It was the day before. I'm sorry. They were off yesterday. So 2 days ago, it was like, oh, man, here we go. It's kind of more of the same. But it was a nice moment for Nolan Arenado hitting a walk-off two-run home run in a season that has been so wildly disappointing. It was actually, for a half a second, nice to see Rockies players with a smile on their face.
Oh, exactly. And I think mostly for Nolan, right? Because as he told me after the game, guys, you know, he thought if they had not won this game, and this is typical of Nolan, that he would have put the blame on his shoulders because he had failed to come through in a couple of spots where he could have driven in an important run. And he comes up in the ninth, and he hasn't, let's face it, since the All-Star break, he hasn't produced very much. And for him to come through with a game winner and a walk-off, that was huge. I think that's his eighth career walk-off RBI, which puts him one behind Dante and Todd Helton for all time in franchise history. That's pretty good company. So I was happy for him. It was great to see finally a little bit of smile on Nolan's face and some joy. Because guys, he's been wearing it. And I think even the fans at home or those that go to the game can see that it's not been the joyous Nolan Arenado we're used to seeing.
Yeah, Patrick, you know, I was downstairs. I walked back upstairs and my son goes, Nolan just hit a walk-off home run. I was like, oh, looked over there. I was like, oh, that's cool. And just kind of went about my business. You know, that's just, yeah. It's a bummer too, because it's so different than what it's been the last couple of years. It's just like, okay, well, at least they didn't get swept. It was kind of meaningless. You look at the first couple games of the series and it's like, I'm watching those games and I think first it might have been, that was Jake McGee, I think, that gave up the runs, and then the next day was Chad Bass. I might have it flip-flop, but both times I'm watching the game, I'm like, oh, my goodness, what is going on? It's so frustrating to watch just when I think it can't get worse. It does get worse.
Yeah, and it's just the pitching has been just a disaster. I mean, Jeff Hoffman the other day comes in and puts his team in a hole that they have no chance of escaping. You know, and I'm writing my Sunday column on this actually right now, kind of. And the Rockies pitching's been bad. But if you look around baseball, the home runs that are going crazy all over the league, it's skewed everything this year. And I think it's only enhanced by Coors Field. So I'm not giving the guys a pass. But I do think a little bit of an aberration. I mean, the Rockies pitchers have already given up 105 home runs this year at Coors. They still have 22 home games left. And last year, I think they gave up only 101 all season as a staff. I mean, it's going around. It's going around all over the majors. So, yeah, the Rockies pitching has been bad, but I think, call it the juice baseball, whatever you want to call it, I think it's a contributing factor for sure.
Last one from me here, Patrick. I'm curious to what should I be looking for throughout the rest of this season, like in terms of value. So like when we talk about the Broncos and if they are a, you know, bad football team, by week 15, 16, 17, you're probably going to see a young quarterback play and you can add some value to that. And there's things to watch for. What should I be watching for the rest of this baseball season with 2020 in mind?
That's a great question. I'm kind of starting to focus that way myself, Zach. I think some of the younger players, I think Ramel Tapia, who we rarely or ever talk about, has quietly had pretty productive, kind of exciting year under the radar. I think watch him, see if he keeps progressing. That's one. I think keep an eye on Kyle Freeland. He's slowly, very slowly making some progress. If the Rockies are going to do anything next year, I think Kyle has got to, by the end of this season, has got to regain, you know, some of the form he had last year. I think John Gray's worth watching to see if he's truly a solid starter or if he's just a so-so guy. You know, I don't know who's that exciting that they're going to bring in September. So that's kind of a wash. You know, and then I think you got to keep an eye out on the terrible relief corps, because not only to see how they progress on some of them, I'm talking about Carlos Estevez and Jairo Diaz and the young guys, but the veterans, too, to see are they going to have any trade value left, right? I mean, if Jake McGee and Brian Shaw continue to lose ball games for this team, you know, the Rockies are going to be stuck with them. I'm sure the Rockies are probably thinking, you know what? God, guys, go out there and do a decent job so maybe somebody else will want you. I mean, that's a terribly cynical thing to say, but I think it's the truth.
Yep. All right, Patrick, we appreciate you making some time for us
on
a Friday.
I have one question for you, and I was listening to you, and I was driving toward Coors today, and the question is this. Why do coaches and a lot of commentators, broadcasters, why is it always the National Football League instead of just NFL.
You
something
know,
to ponder.
You know what? It is so funny because with football, we say National Football League and
all the time.
And football and football field more than we would say like the basketball court. We say like the football field. And like, I don't know. I can't explain. I've thought about that before. I don't have an answer for you.
Yeah, every NFL coach, I just said NFL, but every NFL coach says, well, anytime in the National Football League.
Yeah.
Just a question, just a thought.
Yeah, and I don't think there is an answer. Good stuff. Patrick Saunders from the Denver Post presented by Rox Heating and Air. That's ROX, Rox Heating and Air. Stoke, I feel like, you know how like some people, there's like a small portion of the population likes, get like aroused by getting like whipped, like bound and stuff like that. I feel like you have to have that personality trait.
What are you talking about right now?
I feel like you have to have that personality trait to
keep
be
that stuff private between your wife and yourself, okay? We don't need to be hearing that on the radio station. I know it's Friday, just keep that to yourself, please.
We're
trying to talk sports here. I don't know if you've confused or what. Did you get hit in the head at practice?
I feel like you have to have that personality trait to be watching the Colorado Rockies on a nightly basis.
I don't know
right
what
now.
That personality trait is. Maybe you can
explain that. You like punishment.
Okay. Oh, man, you could have found another way to get to that joke.
No, there's no joke. I'm saying you have to invite punishment into your life on a nightly basis to put yourself through 3 hours of Rockies every night.
You could have phrased it differently. You don't have to bring your whips and chains into that conversation. Whatever you like to do at home, just keep it there, okay?
That's so stupid. All right, I never got to the good news with the offensive line, and I may have two pieces of good news.
Mask? Whips?
It's next. There's no way I'm turning back. All right, so...
kind of sounds like this music kind of just continues the conversation that ended our last segment.
Little Riri never hurt anybody. All right. I said I had some positive news about the offensive line.
Yeah.
I said I had some positive news. And Nick Ferguson, who's been doing a great job filling up the drive all week long, truly of the safety blitz that leads into us every day, is going to join us here. The positive, the negative I said was, I don't trust Ron Leary. I don't trust him to stay healthy. They're predetermining his reps. They're saying it was a planned exit today from practice. Whatever. I don't trust it. I don't believe it. And certainly not for 16 games. I'm not sure for 10. But the positive, I'm sitting there watching one-on-ones with the San Francisco 49ers. And there was a clear man that is a part of our group, and his name is Juwan James.
Really?
He was pleasant to watch. It was like, you know, I don't know what? Now one-on-ones kind of are what they are, but what they are typically is they favor the defender. A lot of space, a lot of times at the end of the drill, the pass rusher is like rushing over the center. It's just like not going to happen. But Juwan James was a physical force. It was awesome to see. And I'll give you another layer of good news. We've been sitting here for almost 2 hours talking about a Broncos practice, and we have not mentioned Garrett Bowles. And this is kind of what we're looking for with Garrett. We're not asking you to be a bulldozer. We're just asking you to be serviceable and don't lead the league in penalties again. Be a solid player.
Right.
And that's what I thought he was today.
That's great news. You look at this offensive line and we needed to get better. Juwan James, we paid a lot of money to. A ton of money. To hopefully solve that right tackle issue. I'm still not sold completely on Juwan James. But that's good news. And that's good to hear. That's good to hear. So hopefully Bowles and Juwan James will provide a nice bookend this year. You need your right tackle and left tackle to play at high levels, and hopefully that'll be the case for the Broncos.
Nick, you can kind of take this anywhere you want it.
This is what I want to know from Nick. Can I just jump in here? I just want to know right off the bat, your overall thoughts on practice, because I thought the intensity level, were you with Denver in 07, right?
Yes.
So we went down to Dallas.
Yes.
And we got our tails kicked for a couple days. And we got our tail kicked in the game. And that's what it felt like to me. It felt like the 49ers were the Cowboys, and that's what they did to us, you know, 12 years ago, and that's what they did to the Broncos, and they were just loud. They had intensity. Did you feel that same thing that I felt today?
Absolutely. I mean, I knew what was awaiting this Broncos team before the 49ers showed up. 2 years ago, I was part of a coaching internship for the 49ers. And that's when the Broncos was trying to figure out who was going to be the quarterback, Simeon or Paxton.
Right.
That first day, it was almost as if the Broncos didn't understand the tempo. Like, no, someone didn't tell them what the tempo of practice and joint practices were supposed to be. It was the same thing today, right? It was no fire. There was no energy. There was no nothing. Now, I can tell you one guy who I know who was really upset about how practice went along, and that was Emmanuel Sanders. He felt as though, you know, if we're being real here, they got punched in the face.
Oh, yeah.
And they didn't respond. And you saw guys trying to figure it out. But the tempo changed a little once we got to the special teams drill. There were certain guys who were showing up.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, okay.
That was the best part of practice.
Yeah, it's real. And that's one thing I love about special teams. This is where you cut your teeth. This is where you earn the right to be a starter or a second team guy. I mean, Tim Patrick.
Yeah.
Right. I had to go up to Tim after practice and say, look, that's what I'm talking about. He set the tempo in a special teams drill because they had him separated on the same field, but just kind of the different groups separated. But he continued to step up and he was talking trash while he was doing it. And that was something that I didn't really see a lot of guys, you know, on this team doing. I know Coach Vangio said, listen, we want to get our work. We don't want to have fights or whatever. But at the same time, I'm like, you're playing against a guy in a different uniform. This is your opportunity to show up. And a lot of guys didn't take advantage of it.
No, and I'll say this about your trash-talking comment. You said, you know, I wanted to see, or Tim Patrick was the only guy I kind of saw that out of. You speak for the both of us. I didn't see it either. But it's really hard to trash-talk when you're getting your ass whooped. Like I'll tell you, a guy who's trash-talking when he's getting it handed to him is a clown. Like, all the chirping came from the Niners side because I don't know how much of practice, how did you divide your time, because there was 180 players out there, but I just stayed on the offensive side. How much of the offense, the Broncos first team offense, did you get to see?
I didn't see too much because I was trying to go back and forth. But what I did see, I was encouraged by a couple of things. I mean, you were talking about the offensive line, Juwan James and Garrett Bowles. You know, the fact of those guys standing out, and when you're not constantly talking about those guys, to me, that's a great thing. That means those guys are doing what they need to do. And if this offense is to get on track the way I think that it can, it needs that from, you know, that offensive line group. But I saw a couple of things that I was really shocked at. I mean, Philip Lindsay has been an underdog since he got to the league. But I saw a little couple flaws in his game because
he did not have a good day.
No, he didn't look the same, which was
really
shocking.
Two drops, yes. And a fumble.
Yes.
Oh wow! See, I was on the defense. And I didn't see that.
And that was shocking for a guy of Phillips' caliber, but here's what I'm about to give a justification for this. He hasn't played a lot of football this offseason. You know, he had the wrist issue. He didn't play a lot in the Seattle Seahawks game. And seeing a different team, I know he really wanted to show them who he was, but to me, he lost a little of concentration. So I'm not worried about him as far as tomorrow is concerned. He's going to fix those problems as far as catching the ball. But some of the other guys, I was concerned.
I want to ask you about the defensive side because that's where I spent the majority of my time. And I heard a lot of hooping and hollering from the other field,
yeah,
the 49ers defense. And there was nothing going on with our defense. And usually in these inter-squad scrimmages, the intensity comes from the defensive guys. You know, when they make plays, they're getting fired up and they're into it. And we had nothing from our group. And I took a step back and I'm looking at this group and said, Who's the nasty in this group from this defense? If you want to be a great defense, you need to have some nasty to you, right? You know, remember Tlaib said, Elway let all the dogs go. There ain't no more dogs over there, right? You know, the T.J. Wards, the Aqib Talibs, the Malik Jacksons. And I looked at this defense like, who is it? And then they finally started getting it going, but that was at 11-10. And it was from two people. It was from Justin Simmons, and it was from Bradley Chubb. And they were the only one that were making some noise, and the intensity was there. And I'm like, am I expecting too much from this defense this year? Because who are the guys to be a great defense? You got to have some of that nasty to you. And who are those guys? And am I reading too much into it?
No, you're not. I mean, that is the basic premise of being playing on defense. You want to dictate the tempo and the pace. You don't want to have it dictated to you. And like you're saying, if they picked it up, maybe I think practice wrapped around 11:25.
Yeah.
If you're picking it up around 11:10. I mean, let's look at it from a game standpoint. You're trying to pick it up in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. It's too late by then.
Yeah.
Right? And then, once again, to know that it was Chubb and Simmons, the two younger guys,
right,
who were kind of stepping up to the plate. I'm happy about that, but I'm still disappointed because there are some veteran guys on this team who you figure that would do it. Like, where was Derek Wolfe? And not to say that you have to engage in fisticuffs, but right, where are you when your DBs make a great play? I want to hear from you. I want to hear you firing your guys up. But on the other field, like you said, that's all you heard. You heard the 49ers, the linebackers, the DBs coming together, congratulating one another because it means something to them. And I'm not trying to say that it doesn't mean anything to the Denver Broncos guys, but I could hardly tell that you were on the field. I couldn't tell.
And how about this play, just real quick, and it stood out to me. Number 27, you were right there with me.
Yeah.
You're right there with me. Number 27, when he lowers his shoulder on Jackson,
Devontae Jackson.
Yes, yeah. When he lowers his shoulder and puts him on his rear end, and there was nothing for
nothing.
The Broncos offense. Like, hey, going over there and grabbing that guy and saying, hey, you know, you don't have to fight him, but say, no. We don't play that. All right, you try that again, we're going to have issues. I was a little bit shocked by that also.
Yeah, that kind of took me by storm, but I know Adrian Colbert.
Right.
I know the type
of
player.
The safety for the 49ers.
For the 49ers. I know his makeup, what he's made of. And once again, I go back to the fact of Coach Fangio said he didn't want fighting. But at the same time, you knock me on my rear end, and I'm just going to get up and jog back to the huddle. I'm wondering if, you know, Jackson's mentality was that of yours. We're getting our butt kicked, so why engage in that? Right. But they needed someone to step up and say something and do something. It never happened.
Yeah. And you know, I saw a handful of times on the RamosLaw.com text line, like maybe because Fangio said don't fight, they were a little bit more timid. You can make someone feel you without fighting. Just, like, this is a physical sport.
He doesn't want him to get punked.
Right.
Right. I guarantee you Vic doesn't want him to, you know, lay down and let the other guy do whatever they want. I mean, that's not what he wants also.
Yeah, this is not about fist fights.
But it's about letting those guys know that, no, there will be issues.
Sure.
And there will be consequences.
Sure.
if you try to do this again.
Nick, really good stuff. I know you got 4 hours of talking to you.
Not one.
To do.
Not two.
Four hours. And so we'll let you go. We appreciate you stopping by.
Hey, appreciate it anytime.
Thanks, Nick.
All right, Nick Ferguson is joining the drive.
I love getting that insight from the safety position, defensive guy, and also he's been with the 49ers last year, so he's got great insight. And it's just another guy that has been in these joint practices that, you know, like will back up what we saw. Right? And the lack of intensity. And so that was good to have Nick on. I'm glad he was here.
I got to ask a question about this offense that we have asked for 3 years in a row, and it's rearing its ugly head again. I'll ask it to you. But first, what's up with that Denver snapshot?